The Afterburn Podcast is a proud supporter of Guns Gear and Memorial Foundation, helping our veterans and their families when they need it most. To learn more, visit gunsgearin.com/rain.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Rain, you gotta take it away, buddy.
Well, I mean, that's fair. I'll do it. But I would like to introduce our introduction person for the day, and that is Bender. Bender, will you take it away with the introduction? It's like rehacking your currency here, man. You can't cheat us on that.
Getting all the currency.
Dang it. Hey, welcome.
Welcome to the Bro Chat.
That's what I say every time anyway.
That's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to welcome the people.
I'm like the one person on this podcast who has no credibility whatsoever hosting a podcast.
That's not really, I don't know if that's,
you're doing,
I don't know if that's really something like you need to aspire to be, you know, I don't know if that's a bar. I interrupted your
I aspire.
Your introduction, as you were saying.
Yeah, so welcome to the Bro Chats. It's been, I don't even know the last time, we did like number 15 last time or something. I don't even know, but it's been a couple months, which is sad. I know the people are clamoring for another Bro Chat. So here's Vader, here's Rain. Take it away, fellas.
You know, the
fun, solid intro.
That was like the best. The funny part of this is you guys are in Atlanta and I'm in Germany. So like this would be the one time we could do a Bro Chat in person, but I messed that up. But I will say it's 1:40 in the morning here. I'm dedicated to the cause. That's how important these Bro Chats are for me. So
Wait, I thought you were in Indianapolis. Did you get out or something?
I'm going there in, I don't know, 3 or 4 hours. I mean, beautiful Indianapolis is calling. So I'm going to bail on Europe, get back to Indy. That's where the people are.
it's like Europe.
It's nice this time of year.
It's like,
very cultured city.
They say it's
very much like Europe.
Yeah.
Kind of the same, just different.
The cologne of the United States.
Yeah, it's not far off.
Yeah. That actually might be accurate. I don't know. Minus the history piece. The hotel I'm in, I don't know, it's kind of weird. I posted a picture today on Instagram. It's like the before and after, so the big battle of Aachen. And a picture of the hotel just like destroyed. Super nice. Not surprisingly, you know, the SS, I think, used it as a headquarters at one point during the war. I'm sure they use a lot of places as headquarters and things. But, you know, here we are. That's today's fact. That's all I got.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe they did some interrogations in that room that you're in.
Yeah.
And, like, pulled some fingernails off and stuff. Could have gotten wild.
I know. That's what I was like. Don't want to go walk down the hall at 1:40 in the morning just waiting for the ghost to get me. No one was in the gym today. It's kind of spooky.
Yeah. Empty gyms.
I'm surprised it even has a gym.
It's
was it a
it's
nice
a quite the European gym. There was two treadmills, a bike, dumbbells up to 25 pounds, one set only, and some machine contraption that was like you can't use. That's super nice.
Right.
A lot of smoking. It's like a smoking corner over in the corner of the gym.
Do you guys remember that Romanian exchange pilot at Columbus when you guys were FAPES and I was going through, and he did not take smoke breaks. He like took flying breaks from smoking. Like he just like posted up on a bench and just smoked nonstop for at least 18 months because that's how long I was there.
That's awesome.
You guys remember this dude?
I remember the Polish students. They were always outside smoking. All around the building, it was like a perimeter of Polish students just always lighting it up.
I feel like that's pretty exchange officer standard. Bender, I don't, like Nelson, who I had on the podcast, Nelson, phenomenal human being, phenomenal fighter pilot. Dutch exchange pilot with us. I remember his smoke break. You know, he would smoke on the patio, like after the step, like I'll catch you guys in the chalk. But the maintainers, you know, because it's a no smoking environment, all had to like walk to the other side or like on the other side of the building to go smoke in like the little leper colony, like the bus stop. That's how the Air Force addresses that.
So. Yeah, the bus stop. That's right. Yeah, the smoking bus outside the handlers. That's still a thing. All our contractors would all, every 22 minutes or whatever, they had to like down every time. Smoke break time, that all seven of them walk out at the same time. The bus stop.
It's really a great way to get out of work.
Yeah. And us?
Not getting much
time. Get outside.
How was it flying in the back seats with those exchange students? I mean, I assume not all exchange students are created equal in all UPT.
I don't have any like terrifying memories of it. Mostly the Americans. My scary stories were Americans, as far as I know. You remember, Rain? I don't remember any. There were some good ones for sure.
That's what,
a lot of them had flown a bunch before they come to U.S. training.
I feel like all the, for the most part, maybe with the exception of like the Afghans, were all really solid and you wanted to fly with them. I did do a dollar ride for a guy. I want to say he was from Nigeria. It's when we were in check flight and I was guest help. That one was an interesting dollar ride. It was, you know, July, 177 degrees out on the ramp, 100% humidity, just sweltering. He had no idea where the runway was, the pattern. I mean, it was, I was like, this is going to be a fun experience for you, my friend. But I don't know, they were all really solid. I like flying with the Alpsters, the Aviation Leadership Program.
Yeah, that's right. Alpsters. Yeah, they're pretty good. There are a couple of them. I flew the guy from Chad who was pretty good, but he had never driven a car before. So it was like bike to airplane. Like, wow, that's as far as mechanized vehicles go. So, but again, he had flown a ton before getting to the ALP program. Or maybe it was the second time through or something, because some of them went through twice. So he it was fine. But
we, we had Mohammed in our pilot training class. He was the first Afghan in U.S. pilot training since like the 1950s or something. He's probably in the United States now, hopefully. I don't know what happened to him. Obviously, there's been a little bit of turmoil over in that region in the past couple of years.
Yeah.
I think we talked about it once or twice. But I remember it might have been like day, you know, 4 or 5 into pilot training doing academics. And we're all living in base housing. So it was a great experience. I remember like he pulled up into the parking lot with his beater car. Like he bought it for like, it was a Crown Vic. It was huge. Like pulled up, he stopped in the middle of the road, his jingle music's going, trunk's popped open, doors are open. He just left it there and just like wandered to people's houses. Like that's just like, oh, this is like normal. Like, dude, like you cannot do that here. Culture.
Yeah. This is Mississippi. I don't know if you ever heard of it.
It's very tolerant.
Yeah. They don't take cars in Mississippi. Fine.
When it was on base, probably.
Or yeah, that's base. True.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, that's funny. I don't. I almost got hit by an A-29 in Afghanistan on a deployment once. That was not supposed to be. No one was talking to him. Mm. Well, nobody that I was talking to was talking to him. All of a sudden, he just blitzed through the stack. You know, there's like whatever. We had drones. We had MC-12. We had an AC, and then us two Vipers. All of a sudden, this A-29 is just like. And it comes back the other way, like, what is happening? So that was great.
Does the term superpower coming through apply for them, since that is their country, you know?
It did until a couple years ago, I guess, but
ooh.
Or maybe
see, I feel like every time we say superpower coming through, we're not in our country. Mm. We're normally in someone else's.
Valid.
Yeah. That's a US thing.
Yeah.
Because we're a superpower.
We're coming through.
You know? At least
that's what they say.
Yeah. Yeah. Those F-35s coming through, that's what's up.
That is what's up.
Getting them all. Yeah.
You know what? F-30, we could probably talk about this later, but the F-35s have just been crushing little dirt shacks and, you know, Houthi land. So there's that. That's what this thing was made for. Very super sophisticated air defenses in Yemen.
Fifth gen coming through. Watch out.
Yeah. Just like we did with the Raptor. Just put a ton of miles on your newest fighter to do what any fighter in the inventory can do.
Yeah.
You know, like those.
It's all right, though.
Yeah, those early days. Oh, like,
tomahawks.
Yeah. You want to like use your limited resources and just burn through them. That's why I was like, you know, the early days of OIR, were the Raptors there when you guys started flying? I mean, they were flying when we were there, but they were dropping 1,000-pound bombs. And you're like, we have Strike Eagles and Vipers and A-10s that can do that. Like, can you just not put all those flying hours on your jets and save them for like the real flight fight, you know?
Real fight? Yeah. Yeah, we had the first combat F-22 drop was while we were in Jordan. Remember that, Vader? It was a big, big deal.
Yeah.
Oh, all the mission planning had almost nothing to do with the war with ISIS. It had everything to do with, we got to take a video of this Raptor dropping a JDAM on some unsuspecting mud hut. But we did it. Yeah. They nailed it, for sure.
Yeah. Stolen mud hut. Not even ISIS. Somebody else. They're just occupied. Justification. Nailed it.
Oh. This got salty way faster than I was planning on it getting. So,
well, we want to talk salty. I just finished ACS.
Oh,
maybe that's for
celebration.
Maybe, yeah. I passed.
Good work. Big. Did you solve all the planning riddles? You had to like plan all these operations in South America. You know,
like that is I don't know. Probably like 13 hours of my life that I will not get back.
Yeah.
It is some riddle, some Rubik's cube of answers. And I don't even know what I got that said, like, you were successful, but I got there and I passed.
Good work.
That's the gist of ACS, is I don't know what I learned or if I learned anything, but I passed.
Well, and then for those who aren't familiar with ACSD, Air Command and Staff College, so Vader is on the leading edge of leadership and all sorts of things. So we're really looking forward to some big things coming out of Vader here in the next few years. Really proud of you. Very proud.
It's true.
Yeah, I'm kind of on the rocket ship. I think they call it a high-performing officer. That's the thing, right?
Yes. Yes, it is.
ACSC and correspondence. That's what they're looking
for. Yep.
I did realize, you know how you have those moments of clarity? There was like one class that was like talking about suppression of enemy air defenses. Like, and I was like, oh, see, that's my thing. And then I'd be sitting there like poo-pooing everybody's responses. I'm like, how could they think that? And then I'd be like replying. And then I get to joint planning. I'd be like, who cares about this stuff? I was like, I get it. I understand. I'm now out of my element.
Yeah, that's funny. It's true.
I guess that's what I learned in ACS. Well,
yeah, but does anybody really know? I don't know. Somebody knows.
I learned if you're writing a graduate level paper, you need to provide more than one source for your article. That's what I learned.
How long did it take you to do ACS?
Oh, man. Gosh, I think I really buckled down in September of last year, and I got like, I mean, 6 months, 5 months, something like that. So September to beginning of March.
Wow.
So yeah, 6 months. Better than in residence. That's like 10 months.
Yeah. So.
Cool.
How long did it take you, Rain? Did you do it?
I did it. I felt like it took me longer. It was like you had to enroll in the courses. I took the last class offered in every single course for like the last version. So they could change to something new. And so I started in November or December of 19. I mean, I should go look at my plaque I have on my wall. I definitely kept the certificate. And it's usually the first thing.
Bachelor.
You know, yeah, it's like
master's degree. Trojan University.
Maybe, yeah. I feel like I was born 6 months. But, you know.
Yeah, I did. I set a lot of alert on the fourth quarter of last calendar year. So I was, while being prepared on a moment's notice to defend
this great nation,
I was also powering through. Yeah. Powering through ACSC, like you read about. Yeah, that was, I honestly think the self-paced academics, probably in the way I did them, which was just like sheer, like brute force, just like, I'm going to make my way through these tests and writing assignments. It was pretty bad because I did all of those in 2 months. And so that was rough.
Brutal.
Okay. We've talked about ACSC way too much at this point.
That's true. That's very true.
And I'll take a hit for that. But yeah, congratulations. And we look forward to your graduation ceremony. I hope I get an invite.
Yeah. Fly out there for it.
That's right. I have to buy the bar. Not worth it. I flew on an A350 the other day. That was pretty fancy. That was the first time.
Where to?
Yeah. Well, actually, it was here. I was trying to obscure my travel, but nobody's going to know what day this is.
No, that's true.
But
how is the old A350? Yeah. Is it pretty nice?
Yeah, the windows are like super, like, geometric, if you will. Like, they're very, I don't know, somebody told me that the Airbus windows are like, you can tell it's an Airbus because of the windows. And, but yeah, it's like the wide body, right? It's like 3-3-3 was the seating configuration. I was like, that's really cool. Mm. I sat in the middle, like, oh, a
3-3-3. You want the 1-2-1. You need to be up in Delta 1. That's where you want to be in life.
Yeah, not all of us fly for FedEx, Rand.
So. Yeah, exactly. That's
biz recce on civilian planes. This would be fun because there'd be people who just like hate it. I didn't know. I did not know what a 777 really looked like until, I mean, honestly, the first time I did a walk around. But like, I don't know. It's got three wheels. That's, or six wheels. And I'm like, that's how I did it. But like a 7-8 and a 350, the windscreens, they look the same to me. Like, I don't know. Does that say A350 on the back? I get real close, or is that a 7-8? Or in China,
because I assumed a 7-8 was larger than an A350. So you're saying a 7-8 and an A350 are similar size?
There's like nine different versions.
They're the same size.
Yeah, they're like, they're wide body. They're big. I've flown in both, but they're nice.
You'd be surprised. Yeah. I've seen like 777s. I'm like, oh, there's a 321. Looks pretty big. You know, because they look the same from a distance. Like the size of them, once they're like next to each other, then you can see how like big it is. But by itself, it's like, it's a big white fuselage and looks like every other airplane.
Yeah.
But I did learn
engines under the wing.
Boeing's, that I didn't know this until we had some VizRecce in my 320 training, but Boeing's like the back end underneath the tail, vertical tail thing, they slant down. Airbuses are flat, are straight across. Yeah. So if the fuselage just continues straight, it's an Airbus. If it goes down underneath the vertical tail, then it's a Boeing. And I'm sure that's not true in every case, and people will let us know, but...
Yeah. Oh, I cannot wait for the feedback.
Hey, we should bash on Boeing now. That's a great segue there, Bender. They've had a lot of news lately.
Perfect.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I'm glad I don't fly at Boeing.
Well, I like the 777, but apparently this is the last plane that was really great made by Boeing. Also, we're not whistleblowers. I'm just going to put that out there. So if anyone from Boeing's listening to this,
we love Boeing. Love it. I own some Boeing stock. Regret it a little bit, but I do.
You shorted it, right? That's, I think, what you want to do with it?
Yes.
Yeah.
That is a wild story, though. See. That guy got off. Well, I don't know if he got off, but did you? Yeah. edit this part. Yeah. I don't know what happened to the guy.
Yeah.
We're not going to edit this out. It's going to stay in here, but
we're in the trust tree.
Yeah, it's fine. Yeah. Let's see. Boeing whistleblower. I'm looking it up now because I haven't really read any of the stories, but I've seen like clips of people saying like, obviously he would not have committed suicide. I don't know the details, but who knows? Boeing's had a rough time. They had the triple, I guess, really United, right? the 777 tire that flew off at like 200 miles an hour. Oh, by the way, I think that thing weighs around 270 pounds. Could you imagine getting hit by that?
Yikes.
It'd be quick.
Yeah. You wouldn't have to think about it. You'd be gone.
Doors blowing off, sliding off runways. I wonder if the
runway. What else?
Do you see the? Yeah.
Yeah, the runway.
The runway one?
I haven't really looked at that one either. I don't know if that was like trying to exit at high speed or.
That's what I heard. I heard it was like a 15 knot turn and they tried to do it above 30 knots and just like pretty much rolled over their own gear and then like skidded off the, cause they were like in the dirt and it was like on the ground. Like people just walked out onto the ground and then, yeah, I saw like a video on Instagram.
That was United.
Yeah. United had a rough couple days. That's a question for you, Bender. Cause I saw that, like, I would think if you slid off the side of the runway, I'm going to say that trips the threshold of an emergency scenario, but in the passenger world, like, is there a criteria for like blowing the slides or like, would you not like, cause I think that thing erupts into a ball of fire. It's going to be an even worse day. And I see that being the threat there, but I don't know. Is that not a thing?
I was surprised because a couple of my EPs in my sim training, like we were on fire. It was like cargo fire or like engine fire. And we'd land and then we'd get checked out by the crew chief or the whatever fire chief would come out and take a look. I'm like, we're on fire, right? Like, I feel like we should probably like get people moving. But no, it was like, okay, fire looks like the fire's out. And then we'd taxi back to the gate or whatever. I'm like, geez, like this is not the Air Force mentality at all. So I don't know. I mean, they're pretty. They definitely like take their time as far as like decision making, which is probably better when you got 200 plus people in the back, you know, instead of panic.
I guess
they got to make their connecting.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Cool. I can see there being criteria. You know, you got now 200 people out on the runway. Like they had that girl in San Francisco with that 777 way back when she got run over by the fire truck. So like you're obviously there's extra risk. So I was just thinking, you know, for us, I think that mentality that from the Air Force kind of carries in, there was a, like during COVID, there was a 7-6 crew that like their left main didn't extend. And the captain did a great job, landed like right on center line in LAX. But the 7-6 at FedEx, they have like an inertial reel. So they go out the window and they have ropes. So I think they went out the rope. Captain was fine, but the like FO shattered his leg. But like there's no fire. Like you could have just waited for like a truck to get you. But again, I think they're thinking, all right, well, this thing could catch on fire. Like, let's get out of here. That's my thought, but I don't know. What do I know?
Yeah.
Nothing.
One, it makes sense that the logistics of egressing 2 to 4 people versus egressing 250. So I guess that does add a lot of complexity. Do you get to blow the slides like when you're in training, like to see what it's like?
I don't think so. They have like practice doors where we get to like practice the mechanics of it. The doors pop open and do all their beeping and stuff, but there's no slides attached. But there is a overwater. There's like a big pool with a fuselage where you do practice going down a slide. I don't think you blow the slide at all, so to speak. But you do like jump at it or whatever, practice with the flotation devices to see what they're like. That's kind of fun. That's like the funnest day of Delta training, probably, in the pool. Yeah, it's fun.
Way more fun than SEER, the water survival training.
Yes, definitely.
Significantly.
Yeah,
we didn't.
Yeah, the rest of the
we didn't do the pool.
4 hour sim for that every day, which is woof.
Am I the only one who gets a spatial deed in those full motion simulators?
Nope.
That's a wreck shot. I did my like CTP sims, and I was telling Bender about this. But like we hit the break where we're like swapping seats, and I'm like full on UPT, like, and they're like, "You doing all right?" And I was like, "I am fine."
The best are the sim guys that like freeze it, like in a turn or something. I only had one instructor. I'm like, dude, what are you doing? No, like, this is not the time to stop this thing. Like, going from, it's, yeah, it's like the little, the spatial D drill. Like, when you're in the spiral, eyes closed, and the instructor just bumps the stick. Not where you want to be.
Yeah, that's brutal. That's
the worst. Honestly, one of the things I'm like, oh, that doesn't sound good that's in my future, you know, or possible.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
We'll see. Yep.
We did a lot more sims in FTDs this past training that I did. So when I did my initial training years ago, it was almost all full motion. But now they bought the FTDs, which are just panels, no motion at all. And so we only did like 4 full motion, I think, of the 20 that we did.
Wow.
Maybe 4 or 5. So it's not as bad as it used to be as far as the full motion.
It's really... Yeah, just the rejected takeoff. That's really where I was like, not my favorite. And the taxi. Outside of that, it was like, whatever, flying around.
Yeah.
The taxis are terrible in the sim. I think, Vader, the one thing you have to do, like, we'll just say in 2 months' time, whenever you're, you know, through the sims and you're checked out, going the line, the first time you rotate, you just got to say, motion's coming on. Like, look over the cabin and say, motion's coming on. Just rotate and climb out. They'll really like that, I think.
In the real play.
They'll be impressed.
Yeah. Oh, that's funny. Yeah. Hopefully my stuff will be together enough where I can make jokes like that. One of my buddies, he got hired back in the day, and I guess it was his first day, and it's, apparently this is standard, and it's just like helmet fire for, like, even though no helmet, but like 5 legs or whatever, something dumb. And they finished the first day, and he's like, did you talk on the radio in the F-16? And apparently all day he just could not, like, respond to the radio call.
Yeah. My first LE leg was like that. He was like, stop. He's like, I have the radios. And then so he, like, made the next 2 calls. And he's like, dude, you cannot talk like that on the radio. So he, like, got us out of the Atlanta environment because it was just so heinous. He couldn't take it anymore. And then as soon as we were, like, up and out, he's like, okay, I'm going to give you the radios back. I want you to say exactly what they said back to them. You just don't do it. As a fighter pilot, you say what you want to say back, you know?
Yeah.
So you, is that what's different about it? That it's, like, very, like, specific?
That's how I was taught, at least. Like, word for word, repeat what they say. Which, yeah, I don't know. In the fighter, you're moving so fast, like, I just pick up, you know, you hear the numbers, and you're like, that's what I need to say back. Like, the altitude, the airspeed, whatever. And the rest of it is just whatever. But...
Yeah.
That's not true. I don't know. We'll find out. But in my sim training recently, I was getting the same feedback. They're like, you'll learn, like, to talk like an airline pilot. Like, so far I haven't. I still push radios, and they're like, stop it. Stop saying push whatever. I'm like, well, it works, but yeah.
I do it as a single ship.
Yeah.
Push.
Yeah, so bad trends as far as bad habit patterns from the Airbus, which is what I've been practicing on. So I was doing my practice emergency procedure sim for my check ride, and in the full motion simulator, it's like, you got to give it full boots of rudder, you know, to get the thing to stay on center line or whatever. And the F-35 noseless steering is not like that. It is like, think about it, and it will turn the airplane for you. So I'm like trying to stop the F-35 on my first landing in the sim, and I am going seriously like, taxi light to taxi, or like runway edge light to runway edge light. I can't, like, could not keep it straight. I was like, is the sim broken? He's like, dude, like, lay off the rudder pedals. And then at the end of it, I did a full 360. Like, I got down to like 20 knots and just put in too much nozzle strength, and it just started spinning out. I'm like, wow. He's like, that is the first time I've seen an F-35 spin out at the end of the runway. So anyway, yeah. I don't know if in real life it's like that, but those are not compatible.
Yeah, that negative transfer has got to be a real thing.
Yeah.
Like, between an airline and, you know, like a DSG, just like flying an airliner and then hopping in a F-35. I guess that's you, right?
People do it.
Bender.
I'm trying to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's impressive. Yeah.
Is it? Rain, are you like 60 feet in the air when the mains touch down in the 777? Like, are you just forever up there?
You're up there pretty high. I have no idea how high that thing, but like, it would be quite the fall if you went out the window.
Yeah.
Like, it would leave a little boo-boo. You're probably not going to walk straight for a while. I mean, the 777 motor, like, if you stand by, again, that's what, like, Ben was talking about earlier. Like, yeah, you look far away. Like, all of them look, like, the same. But, like, the fuselage of, like, a 7.3 can almost fit inside the diameter of a 777 engine. It's a big old. It's a big old motor.
Dang.
Crazy.
Well, you were saying, was it the last time? Was it on the last podcast? You were saying, like, the gross weight of the 777 that you guys are flying around. Isn't it, like, almost a. Isn't it like 700,000 pounds or something?
Hey, I've taken off 765,000 pounds, 764,000 pounds. Yeah. It's.
I don't know if that number, like, freaks anybody else out, but if you are not a. I don't know. That is insane. That's almost, I mean, 750,000 pounds that you're. How are those? And you got two motors, and somehow they have enough thrust to put that in the air. Like,
it's
crazy.
It's crazy to see the, like, usually coming out of, like, Hong Kong, you're taking off that heavy going back to Memphis. But the climb performance, like, it's not like it's slow and struggling to get to altitude. Like, it has no issue. And if you have other planes in front of you, like, I've been taking off the departure procedure because we're outperforming the plane ahead of us. You're like, pretty impressive. I mean, again, those GE guys, give those GE guys a little round of applause. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not the Pratt.
Yeah.
Not the Pratt.
The,
you want that Pratt.
But even like single engine, like there's got to be like dump fuel and all that. Like you're not like, I mean, single engine, it obviously got to be big.
So I guess Bader, you probably can appreciate this. Like I vaguely remember like doing the like engine out in the T-38 and they're trying to get you to like just smoke a Lucky and like take your time. So when you do like the single engine fail or, you know, engine failure on takeoff, I mean, you are just like, you're doing nothing. And you're like, they don't want you to say like, hey, left engine fail, just say engine failure. I'm like, well, I can't, like, I would like to know, yeah, left engine or, you know, left engine fail. Like, no, you'll mess it up. And then the guy will step on the wrong rudder. I'm like, really? Whatever. But you just like, you're sitting there. I mean, you're doing a couple things and you're just like waiting to get to altitude before you start doing checklists. You know, meanwhile, this motor's over here just burning with, 50,000 gallons of fuel surrounded by it. We're like, okay, no, that's fine. Just take our time. Yeah. So it doesn't climb really well with just one in. They put two on there for a reason, I think.
Can you dump fuel on the 777?
Yeah. Do you guys remember the, it was all over. It was COVID. It was a Delta 777 right at the beginning of COVID because Delta got rid of the 777s. They air turned back for something coming out of LAX and they dumped fuel, but they flew right over an elementary school that just happened to have a bunch of kids out for recess. And like, it like just doused all these kids with jet fuel. It was all over the news. So yes, you can just in fuel in the 777. It can take a while.
I remember.
Like, oh yeah. Not what you want, but it's better than a ball of fire or just bending a plane.
That's true.
Yeah. But I don't know. Yeah.
Sounds like the COVID
burning
problem.
Down.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or burning down gas for like 4.5 hours. So you can,
right.
Like, just dump. Like, well, the crazy thing in the C model is because the Viper, you couldn't like dump gas. You know, that just wasn't a thing. Like if you really need to land, you jet your stores and you just land with, yeah. But like in the Eagle, you can dump gas. But I haven't seen it, you know, knock on lumber. But like apparently it'll just not stop dumping gas. And so everybody is like super concerned when they're like, oh, I'm going to dump gas. But like I'm not going to dump too low just in case like I start, like it won't stop. And then you now have like whatever your EP was that caused you to want to dump gas. And now you have effectively a fuel leak via your dump port. And I just don't like
it. Yeah, that 35 can dump, but it has you can set the amount that you want to dump it to, so then it'll stop dumping. But single engine, like you don't care. Like in the that's what I like single engine because the decision matrix is pretty simple. It's like I can either make it or I can't make it, whereas in the F-15 it's like I think I can make it and then you screw it up, or like you gotta do, like you're talking about, I gotta dump and then I gotta stop dumping because I'm still gonna try to fly around. single engine. It's like, well, not if I don't.
And that's the Eagle, because everybody asks me in the community, like, oh, how are the EPs? And I'm like, they're way more complex, because it's like all the redundancy is cool. But when the redundancy breaks, like, you're still like an emergency, you know? And I, the other day I boarded a jet because I have two engine stack displays and you have to have both of them, but they don't have to match. And I was like, I feel like if anything, they should match. Like, you know, if one fuel flow says like 1100 and the other one says 200, I probably shouldn't take that jet. Turns out you're cleared weird. You are. The crazy thing is in the F-16, the exact same motor has operating limit. In the Eagle, there's almost no operating limit.
Huh.
The same motor.
In the I don't know what. Eagle, you don't have critical action procedures, right? Am I?
You have non-cap caps.
Mm.
So, or non-bold face, bold face, where it's like, hey, you need to memorize this, but you don't have to do the test once. And I'm like, so nobody's going to memorize. You know, obviously I remember.
Yeah, naturally.
My check ride just, but yeah, the, I almost had to shut a motor down the other day because I had, I was doing like a practice scramble and we're like intercepting the Cessna, which those darn things are stealthy to the Eagle radar, yeah. Probably to every radar, but the, and they're stealthy to the human eye because you look out the window and you're like, he's not there. He doesn't exist. And, but I like look back inside at my engine stack. And at mill power, my like oil pressure for one of the motors is like 15 PSI. And I was like, oh, that's not good. And it's even yellow. Like the jet is like, I change it from green to yellow because that's not good. So I was like, shoot. So I pull the power back to idle and it just goes to zero. And I was like, I have to shut this motor down. And so in the like time I'm taking to like really diligently think through this, the like oil pressure comes back. I want to go home. I'm done.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to shut motors down today.
Yikes.
Did you give it the old tap, 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 tap on the, is it a peanut gauge or is it digital?
Are you a passionate aviation enthusiast? Then you'll be thrilled to hear about our sponsor, Aircore Aviation. This exciting company has been revolutionizing the aviation industry since 2008, and they have some amazing career opportunities available. More about that in just a minute. Aircore Aviation is at the forefront of airworthiness of legacy aircraft dating all the way back to World War II. Their dedicated team is involved in various aspects of aerospace, including manufacturing, fabrication, restoration, and support, using state-of-the-art technology. Their exceptional expertise in core manufacturing capabilities like metal forming, CNC machining, and complete aircraft rebuilding has led to the restoration of some award-winning aircraft, such as a couple P-51s, such as P-51 Thunderbird, Twilight Tier, and Sierra Sioux 2. And if you've been following me for a while, you might remember I was fortunate enough to fly over the Super Bowl in 2018 in Minneapolis. The formation was led by Sierra Sioux 2 alongside two A-10s and myself in the F-16, so this is a very cool full-circle experience. These incredible achievements have captured the attention of aircraft owners, aviation enthusiasts, and the general public alike. If you've always dreamt of a career in aviation, then Aircore Aviation is the perfect place for you. They are rapidly expanding their team in 2024 and have job openings in departments such as engineering and CAD, quality assurance, fabrication, and restoration. This is your chance to turn a passion into profession. Aircore Aviation is offering some amazing benefits for full-time positions, including health insurance, PTO, HSA, retirement plans, life insurance, and the extra perk of enjoying Fridays off. If you're ready to be part of a team dedicated to fulfilling the dreams, through the preservation of historical aircraft, visit aircoreaviation.com/careers today and take the first step towards an exciting career in aviation. Again, that's aircoreaviation.com/careers. Don't miss out on this incredible opportunity.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So it's two different, like two digital gauges. And, but yeah, they're, it's the one, the problem is you don't know which one to trust more. So it, you just pick the one that's within some semblance of limits. And then you're like, that's probably the one I want to trust. But yeah, but both of them were reading like that you have zero oil pressure. But I've heard people say, like, you hear the motor grinding and all that stuff. It's bad. So I didn't hear that. And then the oil pressure came back. We'll just call it a day. Go take a nap.
Yeah. It's enough work for a guy who just completed ACSC.
Yeah.
That's right. I know. That's what I was yelling in the cockpit. I've got ACSC. I don't got time for this.
That's spicy.
Yeah. Did you guys ever do any of those like practice scrambles or like Civil Air Patrol intercepts or anything?
I did one at Shaw. We just ACA an upgrade for our wingman, but we had the Cessnas out there with us or whatever. It was pretty sporty.
So,
I think that's maybe the most, one of the more dangerous things that we do is try to intercept a Cessna. Which like, but you know, you can get, what was it? 13 AOA was like your low altitude intercept limit or something. Anyway, flying around a 13 AOA in a Viper at 500 feet AGL, it's like, ugh, doesn't feel good. I bet it feels worse than people.
Yeah, well, we have 20 units, I say. Which units?
The best made up. So
that's, yeah. So who knows? Maybe it's probably 13. But yeah, so it's also, but that's what happened. Remember that one Viper in Texas that was doing exactly that? Like, intercepted like a Civil Air Patrol, had like some aircraft malfunction, but he was like super low, super slow, and was just like, get it. Not good. Not what you
want. No, not where, yeah. Now we're going to be in life. Low and slow.
Nope.
Because no one. Yeah. Good. That's the demo, you know, be non-tactical, right? But that was 13 AOA, 500 feet. I think that's the one, like, you practiced it in the sim, and in the sim, you could get out of it if the motor transferred to SEC, because that was the threat. Like, I mean, motor fail, that's easy decision. But if it transferred to SEC, now are you going to hang with it or not? In the sim, you know, if you're like instantaneous and on it, you're probably going to power out and maybe bottom out like 200 feet or so. But like, are you going to hang with that? And like, I hope it's going to catch and work. Probably not. Again, not super tactical.
But why not?
Low and slow. Not where we're going to be. That was like, I think, the most dangerous maneuver.
I gotta be honest, I rode with you on one of those demos and I didn't want to be anywhere in any of it. Like,
yeah.
All of it was like, I don't want to be here. I don't want to be here. 9.5 G's, 100 feet, whatever you're flying at. I'm like, definitely don't want to be here.
We had a good time.
That's
I thought about
that's
it.
Terrible. Yeah, it was fun.
I thought about the other day when, with like the Blue Angels Thunderbird one and, the, like, there's obviously like requirements, like, hey, I got to hit my altitude and my airspeed windows to do the next maneuver and all that kind of stuff. But you're like doing a show. So if you don't hit those numbers, you can't just not do anything because everybody's going to be like, what is going on? So like, how do you balance that? Like, okay, I didn't hit my checkpoints. My safety observer called it. Like what's that process?
Well, if you like, so I, you know, fortunately I never in a show didn't have my gates. You call them gates. So it's certain maneuvers, you know, entry, exit, maybe there's a midpoint gate. So airspeed, altitude, and it's going to be a range. You know, the Viper is pretty easy. It's typically cornering speed with the exception of a few maneuvers where you might be a little bit faster or a little bit slower, such as the slow speed. But if you didn't have them, you would just abort it. Because 99% of the people out there have no idea what's happening anyways. They're like, oh, it's just loud noise. This is great. And if you continue and you pack it in, well, obviously your day is ruined. And then you probably ruined the days of like a lot of other people. And then the mission of recruiting is null and void. And you just erase that. So you had a lot of liberty and were given a lot of leeway in the sense of, you know, like I had to watch all my tapes, right? Do a grade sheet for each. And that went all the way up to the 2-star. So if you like messed something up, it was incumbent upon you to, hey, fess up, own it and say what it was. And then don't go do it again. Like not a crazy thing. I think the worst, like honestly, like the worst feeling for me was NAS Oceania. It was a low day. So I think 1500. I don't even remember what I needed. It was a 1500 for a low show. And I go and do the show. And like one, the shows can't, like performers are canceling throughout the day and going. So it's like one of those days where like the bottoms are kind of moving throughout. I'm like, hey, I'll take off and I'll go touch the bottom of the clouds at 1500 feet. I'll do the show. If it's not, then I'll just do a couple high speed passes, which people would have liked better anyways, and land. So I go up and it's 1500 and like up it, like no kidding when I touch it. So I go do the show. And then I rejoin with the Mustang behind the crowd. And I'm like on the inside of the turn. And I'm just like cringing because like my periphery, I'm like, I feel like I'm getting ready to scrape the trees and scrape the houses down here. And like I lobster eye in and I see we're like at 700 feet. And my first thing was like, oh, I was like, Jimmy thinks I just did this entire show below my minimum. Right? Because of your credibility, like hot dogging out there, like the performers know, like that's not right. I'm like, hey, it's 1,500 feet over the airfield, so let's just fly over. So we went over there, did one pass, and it was 1,500 feet still. So we did like the heritage flight. But so I was like, dude, that you know, it's not worth like packing it in. So if you do mess up a maneuver or something, your safety, I don't know. Bender was my, like, I had Bender, Flash, Edwards, I bet, like, Sort was another one, like, kind of experience. Guys were a little bit older, and then I think it's Static, he only did one show, who were like a little bit older, had a little bit more Viper time, but most of them were young wingmen. And not saying they didn't know, but if they, you know, they've only seen the show a couple times, like if I, they're not gonna recognize it. Oh man, you look like you're really fast coming out of your, you know, high speed pass or min radius turn, like they're not gonna know. I could have just lied, but I didn't. Oh, I didn't.
Yeah.
Again, because yeah, he messed it up. Like you're getting fired, the OG's getting fired, the wing commander's getting fired. You know, the A3, 9th Air Force going. Everyone's just going to get fired if you really jack something up. So, it's a good deal. You don't want to ruin it. It was good. Yeah, good enough as was.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
When I always wonder how, like, I mean, because on an average day, like jets break, and I'm like, it is amazing that it's like an air show and the jet is just like, we're not going to break today, or it's just you need so little to actually do the show that you just don't have to worry about broken stuff.
Mm. Shout out to the maintainers as always, and Bender. I mean, Bender, I don't know how many jets you probably brought to me or back. Like Bender was, I think you got a couple of good deals out of it, like the Super Bowl, bringing a jet up.
I brought the jet back from the Super Bowl.
That's right. Okay.
I thought it was going to be an okay deal, but you didn't tell me it was like minus 75 degrees in Minneapolis. Like,
yeah.
I have honestly, that's probably the closest I've ever been. It's climbing in. Like to touch a Viper that has been sitting out in minus 30 degree weather, it's like instant like frostbite is what it feels like. That was bad. Also, shout out to you, like flying around in a, like the Viper who has no can and no like navigational anything in it. I'm like, how am I going to get from Minneapolis to South Carolina? And it was like, cause I had nothing, like no steer points or anything. And then my EF, so my iPad or whatever, which I've never had to use before cause we just have steer points. It was set to whatever GPS decimal, right. What, you know what I'm saying? Like it's, what do we normally use? Like, hours, decimal, minutes, decimal seconds.
Yeah.
It was not correct. So they're like, go to this point. So I'd look it up in the iPad and I type it in and be like, flash at me, like, you can't type it in like that. I'm like, so then I'm like doing math, like trying to define, like, what is, you know, 55% of that number. Anyway, that was a rough flight. So that I got to bring that jet back. Like, I don't know where I'm going. But I, like 700 miles away, they're like, just go direct Shaw. So that was great. That worked out.
That's nice.
Good.
Yeah. Amazing. Up at like 43. And that thing was cruising up at, when you're that high and you didn't have anything on the airplane at all, it just,
great.
It goes forever. It's awesome.
I made it out of SoCal, out of Riverside there, all the way to Randolph. So a quote, that was the longest flight I had. It was like 1,400 and some odd miles. That one, getting out of SoCal, because it's always, and then the plan was to go Randolph back to Shaw. And I didn't make it to Shaw because Randolph, San Antonio held us down. I mean, SoCal, that's a pain to fly into. Like doing an arrival and a Viper, like, hey, can I just stay high to like 20 miles from the field? Oh, I'll just descend, right? Like, no, you're going to start the arrival 177 miles out. You're like, I'm going to be out of gas. This is great. But.
I got the fuel for that. I don't have the fuel or the SA for that. Like to fly a Star and a Viper, can you imagine? Nope. Not doing that.
I tried. I remember going to like Miami and they're like, hey, can you fly this arrival? It's like unable. Yeah, because you can't do any like RNAV thing. But after they asked me like the second time, I was like, hey, I can't fly the arrival, but I can go if you give me the waypoint, if you clear me point to point to point along it, I can fly that routing. Just don't tell me fly the whatever Miami one arrival. Like, that's not gonna work. But
yeah,
can I just go to initial? Can I just go direct to initial now? It's like, that's yeah. They just want to get rid of you. Yeah. Like, yeah, get rid of it. Go to initial.
Yep, making their life.
Yeah,
that's funny.
Well, that's like you know, it's in the Viper. It was like very common. You would type in the coordinates to as like specific and exacting as the coordinates were available. So you'd type it to like, you know, 3624 dot like 4531. And then I got into the C model and it's like 3624 dot 9. And I'm like, and they're like, it doesn't
close enough.
Like, you know, close enough. And you could, you know, it turns out you could have exactly done that in the Viper, just like, round number probably a 6, you know, and then just like got you in the ballpark. Cause I mean, we can't type in with more specificity in the C model than that. So it's like, that's where the numbers end. And it's like,
I mean, it, you know, it's a killing machine. You really need to be able to do it. I had, I was like going out to Tucson with the Raptors. And then we cleared off the tanker the last bit. And Loco was leading it. He's like, hey, let's go up into the 30s. I'm like, sweet. I'm with you. That means I'm like wearing your RVSM blanket, right? And so we get up into RVSM airspace, and hey, like the second controller's like, do you have F-16s with you? And it was like, yeah, A-firm. We're like, they're not RVSM capable. It's like, ooh, yeah, no, we are not. So they kicked us out of RVSM airspace. I'm like, I'm staying with the Raptor. It's fine.
Yeah, but you're like, I'll be within a mile, plus or minus whatever. What is it, 100 feet? And they're like, uh-uh. Like, you can't do that.
It's probably appropriate,
isn't it? Can't you just request non-RVSM? Like, hey, I want 35,000 feet.
I don't think maybe that happens. I don't think it happens very often where they'll approve it. There's so much airline traffic that's going over everywhere.
Yeah.
See, maybe the C model has just been like grandfathered in or whatever. Gets approved every single time. I don't know if like some F-16 somewhere, sometime just screwed it up for everybody, like me in Japan a long time ago. But the turns out you cannot get to 43,000 feet in a bag targeting pod, ECM, HTS. It's like weird. Who would have thought? Oh man, that was a terrible day. But the C model, you're like, hey, I'd like 39,000 feet. And they're like, clear, non-RVSM. And the best part is the C model could easily go up to 43. We're just going to have a rapid decompression. So we're like 35, much more gentlemanly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The old canopy seat. Very old.
I'd be pretty nervous in an Eagle. I was nervous in a Viper going that high.
Yeah. Especially Blade. He had the rapid
decompression. Yeah, he did.
Yeah. It's, I mean, they actually, because a long time ago, they had obviously a pilot crash. They have like a digital like cockpit pressure, you know, thing, and its schedule is pretty much the same like the Viper, but yeah, it doesn't have that weird ECS rollback. You guys know, you remember the Viper, where it would just like, it doesn't have that. So it's kind of nice where it just like, you hear no sound and you're like, this is kind of terrifying.
Yeah.
Like,
I had three rapid decompressions and That, which I don't like going high.
True, that's good for your body.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One was doing a, it was going down, we're going down to Columbia and we put a single bag jet or a single bag on the jet. And so I went out to, it had to go fly because of it. So I went and I added in as a high fast flyer for, I think, swap the iPug something ride, but doing like 1.6 as I'm cruising out, like in the 40s. And like, yeah, I look like I got a little foggy. Like I touched my visor and I looked down at the cabin pressure and right there, just poof, like the chamber, just IMC, like split S. And then,
yeah,
I did one over top of Langley, which at 43,000 feet and at 0.92 Mach in a clean Viper, it's really challenging to descend and not like break the sound barrier. Yeah.
You know. Pointed right at the Capitol.
Yeah. Just superpower. I'm here. Celebrate.
You're welcome. Set off all the alarms. Yeah. Those rapid D's, like, I don't know about you guys. Luckily, I've only been like on the wing of people who had depressurization, but it's like it'll mess people up. They'll be kind of like not all there for a while. Like if they kind of get behind that, like, or get, you know, hypoxic, like that's kind of terrifying because you don't realize it, you know.
So now the big thing is. With hypocapnia, is that what it's called? I don't know. So we do like our are you locks still in the CMO? You are, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, it's an O-box thing, but I guess I don't know, block 50s don't really have the issue, but the F-22s do, obviously, and I think it's because they go so high, but the F-35s have a lot of issues with it also. But it's, you don't, you get the same initial symptoms of, you know, hypo whatever, anyway. Yeah, hypoxia. So it feels the same, except for when you go 100% oxygen, nothing happens. Like, you don't, you know, it doesn't give you instantaneous, like, you don't start feeling better. And so I don't know what the whole science is behind it or whatever, but it's, it, like, guys have, like, had it and they can't remember, you know, like, chunks of the, they'll, like, be on the RTB and have zero memory of getting back to the field, or, like, they'll land and, like, be falling asleep almost when they're, like, trying to taxi off the road. Like, it's pretty wild stuff. So now when we do our ROBD, which is when we sit in the sim and then they do the oxygen deprivation thing or whatever, that's just part of it. But they're like, that's not a big deal. Everybody knows how to deal with that. But if you get hypocapnia or whatever, like, you know, like you got to get the autopilot on quick. You got to get it set to like 40,000 feet, airspeed hold, 30 degrees of bank, and then just see. Like the expectation is you'll wake up at some point and like fly it back to land it. I'm like, I don't. That's like, maybe the O-Bogs isn't what we want to be using, but.
Well, why don't you just pull your emergency oxygen?
Because it doesn't do anything. It doesn't matter. Like, it's not a lack of oxygen. I don't even know what it is. We'd have to have a physiologist on here.
A decrease in a word I can't pronounce, blood carbon dioxide. That's what Google says.
Yeah, that sounds pretty scientific. Yeah. So that's how you know the difference between. Because I had a slow decompression or whatever, I don't know, in Masao. So I was at 20,000 feet and then it slowly crept up, but the warning doesn't go off until your cabin altitude gets to, or your cockpit altitude, what, like 19,000 feet or something?
No, it's higher than that. It's too high. It's like, why does the warning?
Yeah, it didn't go off. Anyway, but I had my mask down, which you're not supposed to do, but I didn't do that.
I always kept my mask up. I never took it down.
Always. Anyway, all of a sudden I was like, I can't like see anything, you know, like everything started to get like bad. And then I could hear myself breathing in my ears. I'm like, what is going on here? And I realized, then I looked at my cabin altimeter or whatever. It was at like 18.7 and it had been for who knows how long. So it's like, oh, anyway, so the training works. I was like, I got to get on my oxygen. But I guess if you have hypocapnia, it doesn't, you get on the oxygen and it's just going to take a while before it sorts itself out, which is not ideal.
Yeah, I've heard dudes same thing, and the crazy thing is they'll like respond to you, they'll like land the jet,
yeah,
and they'll get out and be like, where's the obstacle?
Yeah, like, what happened?
Yeah, crazy.
Did you guys have anyone in the chamber that got hypoxic that wrote it out?
Well, yeah. I wasn't there, but he told me the story later. He went through before. I think we all know him. He got like honorary in there, and you would definitely know because he's an honorary guy in general. But yeah, really honorary. Where they were like, "Hey, put your mask up." He was like, "No." So, that's luckily because that's like I've heard that's like a deal breaker. Like if you don't follow the rules, that's like you
watch out. You're gonna fail. Yeah. Fail the chamber.
Yeah. Because I mean, you gotta respond correctly to your symptoms.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what I feel like. I didn't really have any symptoms, or I was just too much of a wuss. Because like, I just don't want to be at the end, so I'm gonna put my mask up. I wasn't first, but I wasn't gonna be last.
Yeah.
We had a guy who was like a returned active duty, and I remember he did not put his mask up. Just like one of these old crusty dudes. And he went out of his mind, basically. It was like showing the cards. Like, he was just completely clueless. You're like, oh, man. Yeah, that's what happened. Okay. Yeah, sweet. Don't get hypoxic. Check.
Yeah.
That's don't want that.
Yeah, pass. Hard pass.
I found my centrifuge video the other day. But the CD was broken in half and I never downloaded it. My centrifuge video has gone
lost to the ages.
I don't know.
And I'm not.
Yeah.
They can't make.
I don't, you got to redo that because we don't have video.
We should watch those one day. I don't know if I have my
video or didn't have.
Bender, do you have yours?
Oh, yeah. I do. I don't know. I'd have to dig. But yeah, my kids have seen it because at the end, I say like, that hurt like hell or whatever. And all my kids are like, oh, what did you say? Which I shouldn't have said it right now. Because I have a son who listens to this podcast. And he's going to tell my wife.
But you had to say it because it's an accurate representation of history. So thanks for being honest. Keep it history accurate.
Yeah.
We strive for.
It was bad. Yeah.
It was terrible. It's so much worse than pulling the jet. Did you guys? So I did the one at Holloman and then the one at Brooks. The one at Brooks I thought was really terrible. I was spatial deep because you could kind of see out the side. Like you kept moving. I guess it was a shorter arm. And also it was a Viper profile. It was a very miserable experience. I would not prefer to do that again, ever.
Yeah, I heard Wright Patterson. Is the Brooks one's gone now because I only went through Brooks, but the Brooks one's gone now. It's at Wright Pat, and apparently it's like a full up video game where you're like chasing a hornet and you're trying to gun a hornet, and apparently it makes it a lot more like doable because I think everybody, if I just went out there and tried to pull 9Gs all day, that'd be the worst day ever. But you happen to pull 9Gs while you're trying to fight someone in BFM, and you're like, I didn't even notice. So apparently it makes the similar like the huge a little better, but yeah, I was so sick. I mean, like for like the next whole day, like not even for like an hour. Like I was sick for like 18 hours.
Miserable.
Hypocapnia.
Yeah, maybe that's what happened. Right.
It didn't help that we went to the Riverwalk.
Contributing factor.
One of my favorite part was like we're getting to the airport the next morning, and like everybody's not feeling good, and one of the guys like throws up in the trash can walking into the San Antonio airport, and as we're getting on the airplane, one of the other guys in my class is like, "We're Air Force pilots," so they're like, "We'd like to thank all of our Air Force pilots on board." Well, one of those Air Force pilots is throwing up in one of the sick bags in the seat at that moment. This trip has gone off the rails.
And there's a billion retirees in San Antonio, too, just waiting to write someone a letter.
Yep.
But look at you now, graduate of Air Command and Staff College.
You know, I finally made something of myself, you know, ACSC.
Well, you're going to be a lieutenant colonel soon, which, we never got Chuck and Spears at the MPF, but they're not good at their jobs still. So nothing Nothing has changed.
Well, I know the guy who's supposed to take over our squadron command in April put in his paperwork to promote to lieutenant colonel in December, January, and he is still not lieutenant colonel. So it's right now, I think it's like a 4 to 6 month turnaround on actually getting promoted from the day you are eligible for.
I'm sure you get back pay, right?
I did. You do get back pay.
If only.
Oh.
You don't?
No. Seriously?
They do. Well, somebody better tell California they're in the wrong if that's the case. Because I know due to, because like, I don't know if it's like a clerical error, then you don't get back pay. But like, I know a guy who's like going on 18 months and hasn't been on major because this is the best. They put his package up. Something was wrong in FSS. So it gets kicked back. It just sits on somebody's desk for like 10 months. Then he's like, hey, I should have promoted like almost a year ago. I start asking the question. And they're like, well, this paperwork's out of date. He needs to do a new PT test. And he's like, I did one. Oh, 12 months ago when I first submitted this paperwork. And yeah, so he's just like, it's this like constant cycle where your paperwork's out of date by the time they submit it again because they took so long to resubmit. If Air National Guard and Reserve, if you are listening, if you could fix the support side of your organization and stop picking up all the extra work from the active duty, you would have one of the better organizations on the planet. But you're not going to do that.
Yeah.
So we're going to keep going.
It's going to be an unable.
It's going to be bad. I'm going from active reservist to a part-time reservist. And my MPF, who has been paying me for 4 years, is like, who are you? I'm like, well,
yes,
the same guy that's been paying yesterday. That's me. I just want to get paid, you know, less. Like, that's a good deal for you. Like, pay me less. They're like, no. Nope. So they're like, you need to apply to separate from your AGR order. Like, that doesn't
make sense.
That doesn't make any sense. But apparently that's, I'm like, I have to apply, like, but I'm getting paid still. I'm going to have to repay it all, but I'm getting paid still. Like, oh, we can't in-process you as a TR, as a part-timer, until we've processed your application that you have to fill out to separate from your active order or whatever. Like, and then they're like, oh, also we need your marriage certificate, the birth certificates of all your kids to prove that you have the dependents that you say you have. I'm like, the dependents that you've been paying me for the last 4 years, like it is so, like, I've known for all four freaking years. Like, we know each other face to face. Like, put in the freaking.
Well, and they already have all that documentation that you had to submit when you went on the original order that they shredded or something. Which, do you have like an addendum for all your dependents? Like, does it fit on?
No, I always have to submit a second page with like extra. Extra. We almost never get all of them. Like, any order, PCS order I've had always has an amendment with the two kids that they forgot to put on.
The Bender baseball team.
They're like, sorry, you two, you can't come with us. Yeah.
I need that mileage pay for each of those kids, though. You know what? It's a lot of work having a lot of kids, but every tax season when I do my taxes, I'm like, thank goodness. Like, all those are like, give me some.
Turns out, I don't think that the finances work out. I don't think those books balance on your tax return.
They probably don't. But
Turns out they're more expensive.
I don't think about that. So,
yeah, that's right.
Bring you just.
What have they done for me now? You've got me a child tax
credit. Child tax credit.
Yeah, they wake up and thank them every morning.
Yep.
Well,
that's an hour and 5 minutes. Well, we can keep going, or we can.
We did. That went fast.
Yeah, a lot of ground covered.
I got to get my beauty.
Yeah, slip. Big day.
So
big day.
We got a big day tomorrow. Yeah.
We're all rooting for you.
We'll see.
Come on, Vader.
Yeah, thank you.
Don't be the That's one. Right. Don't be the one, bro, who didn't get picked up. Just kidding. I'm knocking on lumber for you.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see. You'll see the next bro chat if I'm all sulky. You guys will know.
I'm gonna feel really terrible if something like that does happen. I'm here joking and it's on record for everybody to listen to.
Yeah,
well, that's right. And I hope you feel bad.
Well, again, I think we pride ourselves on credibility and bringing facts to the people. That's what we're doing here. So we're documenting this for history. Big day. Big day for Vader tomorrow.
Yeah.
That's right. You're welcome, everyone.
Good job, Vader.
We did our part.
We're going to get another bro chat out next week, right? That's the plan?
Well, we're on track.
I think that's what we said maybe 3 months ago.
Yeah, we're gonna do two a week every week. I think that's what we said. Now it's on record. Wives will be super impressed with that. They'd be all about that.
So excited.
Yeah. You're gonna love it.
Yeah. All right.
Well, it was great seeing you guys again.
Yeah. Thanks, fellas.
See you soon.
All right. Bye, everybody.
See ya.
The Afterburn Podcast is a proud supporter of Guns, Gear, and Memorial Foundation, helping our veterans and their families when they need it most. To learn more, visit gunsgarin.com/rain.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.